गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नृतिभिसेदसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करभावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः So sitting yourself comfortably straight. Closing your eyes, take a few deep breaths. Feeling the body is settling in the stillness of the posture. And my mind quieting down, getting more gathered, aware by being with my breath. So I become aware and present now. So in the Nididhyasanam, I take the vision that's been given to me in Vedanta and I bring it to my mind. That's the first thing I can do. In Mananam, I churn it. To understand, look from different angles, see what my doubts are, try to consolidate everything. But here I just look at it as it is, whether bringing it to my mind or when a deeper understanding is there, looking it from that angle. So, in this Upanishad, it's pointing out, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam. The one universal consciousness is present, is in and through everything. Really speaking, there is only this, only the Isha, the universal consciousness. So when I look at the image of the ocean is all water. Water is in and through every single part of the ocean. There isn't water and ocean. Water is manifest as the ocean. You can't find one drop within the ocean that isn't the manifestation of water. And then if you take a wave in the ocean, the wave is but a manifestation of the ocean, not something separate other than the ocean. Now the wave substantially, the substance is the same water as the ocean, not something else. It doesn't have its own substance. You can't even say it's a specific part of the ocean. Which part is it? Every moment it's a different part. So it's manifestation of the ocean. And then also its momentum, direction. Everything else to do with it like this is not its own. It comes from the ocean. It is dependent. It is the ocean itself. Never was something separate. When the wave takes itself as something separate, then it's concerned about the other waves that may clash with it. It's concerned that it's going to end at some point. It's concerned that its momentum now is a little less than it used to be, or its form has become a little more crooked than used to be a straight wave. Now it's a breaking wave. All these things. And the wave may pray to the ocean, "Oh, my creator, please protect me from these waves, from the difficulties I'm going through. Oh, ocean, make me a bigger wave, stronger wave." All these things the wave may do. "Please protect me from crashing on the shore and disappearing." But when the wave takes itself as the water, then it's no different than the ocean. As substance, it is the ocean itself. So this example is a very pertinent and very good one when I look at myself, the individual, and I look at the world. Where is the substance behind the universe? One substance eventually, one base, the Ishvara in and through everything. All world manifests when it starts, the same substance is there in and throughout now as it was from the beginning. Just as the water manifests in the whole ocean, the pure existence manifests as the universe. Anything you take from the ocean, any part, you'll find the same water. Anything you look at in the universe exists. The existence is there. Form can change, but the same existence you always find there. The adhishtanam, the base, substratum, is the pure existence. So I say, I am, I exist, and the world exists, and I have to deal with this world, big and small waves coming and going, problems coming and going, my mortality coming at some point, all of this, all these concerns I have, as the wave, as the individual. But then when I look at myself, okay, as a physical being, am I separate from this physical world? How is my physical beingness different than the wave in the water? The wave is not separate from the water. Physically, I'm not separate from the physical manifest universe. All the material that I am made out of physically is the material making the rest of the world. Some is added to this body, some taken away. Every moment it's changing. So what is this solid, the physical body, both not a solid thing and not something separate from the rest of the world. Then I'm alive. There's a life force that's enlivening me. I'm breathing. Am I making that breath move? The same life force in and through all the living creatures. They say life started on Earth, manifest on Earth, like a fire starts somewhere and spreads. How can I say it's just, I am a separate living being? Am I making myself live? No. Universal laws, universal prana, universal life is manifest as this, manifest within this body as it is within other bodies. As I have my computer on, the electricity is coming in here, electricity is going in the computer in your house. They're not separate electricities. One prana in and through everything. My senses, I see, I hear. So I'm hearing now. Am I making the sound come and go? Am I making the hearing happening? It just happens. Just as the wind is blowing, it's happening. It's not me doing it. Universal phenomena. Hearing is a universal phenomena. I don't make myself here, it manifests. But I think, so I'll say, my thinking is me, the individual. That's not the Ishvara. Did I make the thoughts come and go? I want to think and then I can't as much. Mind isn't cooperating. I don't want to think, I want to be quiet, mind is moving. And also, did I start the thoughts, create them? Did I create this device? In some ways, maybe using the mind as I use my phone. But did I make it? Can I just put it aside? It doesn't have to do with me. And again, it's a universal phenomena. Thoughts manifest in all the minds. Intelligence manifests in the whole creation. Not an individual phenomena. So I'm a conscious being, I'm aware. And again, am I making the awareness be there? Just happens. I can't claim I created the awareness. I make myself be aware. No, it also just happens. I do not do it. Any part this way, I look at myself, it's like looking at a part of the wave. Any part you look at, it's the ocean. Ocean manifest. So here, universal presence manifest. The idea of being the separate being is an idea, a thought. Everything manifest in the universe has a utility within the world, but a limited warranty, a limited usefulness or limited reality. So for activity, yes, some identity needed. or from absolute standpoint, that identity is an idea, not any absolute reality. Just as the wave doesn't have its own existence, it is the ocean itself. It's not a separate thing. The individual, I, the individual is not a separate entity. It is a manifestation of this universal being, one universal being. As I can observe, see the wave, but still, though I see its form, I understand it's just the ocean. There's no separate thing called wave. Same way I can look at myself, see this whole personality is something there like the wave, but doesn't have its own intrinsic existence. It is but the same as the rest of creation, the one manifest of this whole creation. Shanti, shanti, shanti. We chant our first verse, part by part. Ishavasyamidam sarvam. Yat. Kincha jagatyan jagat tena chaktena bhunjithah magridah kasya svidhanam. So, namaste to those who've joined. Manifested, like the waves manifest in the ocean, manifested during the meditation. So good morning. So this verse, as we've been looking at, it's the interesting thing is, on the one hand, it's the most universal, I think you can see in the Upanishads, just saying Ishavasamidam Sarvam. But then it needs then, it has least specificity in it. That's why it takes a lot more information needed to discuss it. It's given very briefly, where in other parts, it's discussed much more in detail. So this is an interesting thing about this Upanishad being very terse like this. So in any case, so we've been spending some time on this first verse, which is, again, as we said, the two first verses are the whole vision of these teachings, and the first one especially. So that's why this one is what we're looking at the most. Ishavasyam idam sarvam, seeing the one in and through everything. And as we were pointing out, one has to look at it all the way to the depth, not just partially. Because we look at it partially and then we can have a partial solution, right? partial thing, but that doesn't do. And also in looking at the reality of something, then a compromise doesn't work. The scientists, they don't compromise. I'm going to study this, and this is good enough. I'm close enough, so that's good enough. And, you know, good for them. The scientists are saying, yes, we're very close to getting to the bottom of what is behind the creation in this. We're almost there. And good for them that they're thinking like they're really working at it. They're finding phenomenal things that we would never have imagined of. So, very nice. So that attitude is what's needed for this too. I'll tell you an interesting thing with this. That I think if a, the scientists would scientists that really look deeply into, a lot of them have to then shift to the, some of these things. It's hard to believe not when if they really have some deeper understanding of the world, especially like physicists. Because I know Einstein, when he was saying that about the creation, that, you know, the Gita is one of the best explanations or something like this. Again, exactly how he said, I don't know. And also, I used to know this group of monks, of Buddhist monks. They're called Chungtai Monastery. They have a place in Lafayette, California. Jyoti and I, we used to invite their abbot, would give talks when we had the center in Berkeley. And she also danced at their place a few times. And then they opened, they have a place in Sunnyvale or something. One of them was a censor classmate of mine in the university, that's how I know. He became later the abbot in Sunnyvale that I haven't seen in years. But in any case, a lot of those, the monks there, were doctoral students, postdocs, Taiwanese people. And I guess they really looked deeply into things, and then they saw, well, this doesn't totally answer, something else is answering. So that's my thought. And looking into somebody who really looks into what is behind, it takes a lot to do, and just the science can't totally answer it, it seems to. That's what at least Vedanta is saying. That's you're looking at the picture, but you're taking yourself out, you're taking an axiom and without the proof, and that's not scientific. Taking on the individual, you know, this world is a manifest reality. What I think, this, the mind can figure everything out. From there, let's go. Where it says, why is it like this? So some things like this, Vedanta says, well, it doesn't really, won't really work like that. But in any case. So as we were saying last time, it was saying this first verse, there are two parts to it, the sadhya and sadhanam. So sadhya meaning, what is it that we're trying to obtain, right? What is it that we're trying, that is the goal, or that exactly, sadhya, what is to be obtained? And second is sadhana. Sadhanam, the means for it. So this is what it's pointing out. And actually going back just to this point of the sadhya, is one of the most difficult things in Vedanta is this. I come with a fixed idea of myself. It's very hard not to have a fixed idea of myself. I'm this individual that's so deeply ingrained. It's very hard not to have that. Just to shake that a little bit takes a lot. Because this is the identity I know. I'm this individual. And so I come convinced of this. And now with this, I want to go and I want to see, okay, now I'm this something. I want to experience I'm something greater than this. Huh? Very hard to do that. So this whole idea of myself being the individual has to be shaked. At the time when I was used to live in our ashram, our acharya at the time, he went to Rishikesh. He'd be in India every year. He's also a Western fellow, South Africa. So he went, and he, in Rishikesh, Swami Krishnananda was there at the time. He's not alive anymore, one of Swami Shivananda's most brilliant disciples. So he saw Swami Krishnananda, and Swami Krishnananda said, yes, who are you? He said, my name is this and this, and I'm born in South Africa, and I live here, and I'm disciple Swami Vishnavanandji, and all this. So he said, with all this in your mind, you want to go to Brahmaloka now. Meaning, you have all this in your mind, you have to throw, if you were looking for something deeper, you have to throw out these ideas like this. Swami Krishnananda was very, very sharp. They say his tongue was very sharp like this, to cut away all the nonsense. Like our intellect has to be in Vedanta, cut and throw away whatever's not needed like this. So this is what happens. So I have this objective idea of myself, and that whole thing is being questioned. And this whole thing being questioned takes a lot to take and change it like this. It takes a lot to do. Like here, look on if you see it on a public larger scale, like our country and other countries have constitutions, to make an amendment to the constitution, how difficult it is, because people's ideas are set in something, right? Let's say in USA, electoral college, to change that popular vote. They've tried before, didn't manage. It's very ingrained, probably hundreds of years till they can do it, I'm guessing. It takes very, very difficult to shift ideas. So when you see it on a you know, larger scale, it's also an individual scale. Just say we say I'm not the body, but it's very hard to really say, you know, really think I'm not the body. It takes a lot to do because we have some idea of it. But as this individual with the body, I'm trying to think of, so the whole base is being shaken up. So it takes a lot to look into, and then it takes a lot of courage to really look into, not, you know, to put the other idea assumptions aside. So in any case, so the first verse then was saying, yes, there's the one presence in and through everything. And everything, idam, as those coming on Thursday night as well, their idam was dealt with a little more. Everything, meaning, you'll say you'll tell the wave, the water is in and through everything in the ocean, everything. And and this wave will look around, see the other waves and everything, oh yeah, around them. But around me, the water that I am, no, not that. It stops there. But the thing is, that's how it feels. Yes, I can see, okay, the God is in and through everything. But this body, okay. These seeing, no, it can't be. I'm seeing. These thoughts, no, it can't be. So it takes a lot to, this is also idam, this body, mind, also part of the idam, part of this, like this. So this is in and through everything. Nothing is outside of that. Nothing, the ocean, not one drop there is not, you know, the ocean. Then the second verse, the sadhana part that we said, right? Sadhana. Then he starts with tena chaktena bhunjitaha, by this renunciation, then you protect yourself. This is what he's saying. And so this is an interesting thing, because this vision is renunciation. People talk of sannyasa renunciation. Sannyasa, there's two different things. One sannyasa is a external, you know, renunciation. Somebody leaves, then okay, now I don't have any individual connection. I'm universal, finished, like this. So that this is one thing, but that's an external renunciation. Internal renunciation, something different. As I think we said last time, with the story with the begging bowl, right? That this is that the external renunciation, one thing, but the inner one is different. The inner one is, and what is this inner renunciation, this vision? It's an understanding. Where actually in Vedanta it says like this. In Vedanta we have the fourfold means for liberation, right? The sadhana chatushtaya. So this one, the fourth one, is mumukshutvam, burning desire for liberation. But as one starts studying Vedanta, this mumukshutvam changes into from wanting to be liberated to wanting to know, like this. I want to know because I want to understand. I see the problem is misunderstanding, like this. This is how it's changed. It changes like this, from moksha-miccha, desires of liberation, right, to jnana-miccha, desire to know, like this. This is how it changes, that this is what really, because I want to understand it. Because the renunciation here is an understanding, negate everything that's mithya, negate mithya and see what is really there, what is abadhitam, what is not possible to discard. Because everything else discarded, meaning it's mithya, it'll just be for some time, and then what? Like this. So this is what happens. So this is really, so in the end, what is it? It is the, this renunciation then is renouncing these other ideas that I have by a clear vision, dropping the other ones in this way. So, and an interesting thing though, at first, like for instance, if you take the Dhrikdrishya Viveka methodology, at first there's the Viveka that's needed. Viveka, what isn't me? So I know I'm conscious being, all the other things I drop. But then, afterwards it also is, when everything else drop, it becomes as though a shadow, and then also it really is just a manifestation, the same thing that I am myself, like this. That it's not something separate, there isn't no separate thing, it just seems to be something separate. So then this means that there is just the one in and through everything. So this is how, you know, if I'm doing it from the Drigdisha perspective, that's how it works. First, there's Atma and Atma, then there's only one Atma, one Brahman. If it's done from other angle, from my look outside the universe, I see, okay, Ishavasam idam sarvam, Brahmasti, one consciousness through everything. And then if I keep looking further and seeing what is, you know, Brahman is everything, eventually that has to percolate enough that I see it's Brahman asmi, Brahmasmi, I am that Brahman. So either way you're looking at it, whether you're looking from the individual first or from the, you know, universal first, comes to the same thing. So renouncing the other ideas, and then from this vision, helping to protect myself with this vision, because anything else takes me away from this vision, right? And if I take myself away from this vision, then that leads to the bondage and suffering. That's what's said. This is what happens. Because then, if I'm not that, I'm the individual. If I'm the individual, then I'm going to sit up all night because I'm worried who's going to win the election or not, right? Like this. This is what happens. And some people were probably celebrating too much yesterday, so now, before they were worried, down, you know, they now too much up, so they were celebrating, and now they're asleep and not here in class. But in any case, what happens is then it's being caught up again. As it, this is, you know, Vedanta, so it's the culmination of, but all the preparation needed too, meaning it doesn't, you know, doesn't mean I don't do my dharma, my duty. As an individual, I do my duty like this. So whatever that duty is I have to do, it's not that I run away from that doesn't help. But the thing is, the understanding has to change like this. So this is what happens, is this. And then what happens is, I look into it, and then I study, I look into, I understand, and then also I need to deal with everything else. I study and I look into, and the next day I have to go to work, and I have to cook, and I have to take care of whatever it is. So the rest of the life is a very good testing ground or training ground for it. Test my vision. How much am I seeing from this angle? How much from that? And then learning to slowly shift my, how I see the things, that the other things don't, you know, don't affect it, and that I'm acting from this perspective. And so it's, you know, wonderful training ground. We'll say, well, why do I have to go through all this stuff in this? Well, it's a training ground, and a test also tests you. Swami Shivananda, a very nice story that happened with him, is that one time somebody that was staying in the ashram was a little mentally deranged. Actually, my guru once complained to him when he was a young disciple in the ashram, saying, why so many people are here with so much problems, they cause a lot of trouble here in the ashram. So Swami Shivananda said, yes, because they need my help. If you don't need my help, you don't have to be here. But they need my help, that's why they're here, and I'll keep them here. So this one person wanted to hit Swami Shivananda with an axe. Everybody in silent meditation wanted to hit him with an axe like this. And Swami Vishwanandaji, my guru, was Swami Shivananda's attendant then. And he was young Hatha Yogi, so he's very, very strong. And so he was small but very strong, so he grabbed that person and pinned him down. And he was, you know, he said that the anger built inside of him, he didn't slap, but his thought was to slap. Swami Shivananda said to him, Vishnu Swami, control yourself. That's like this. And so they took the person to the prison, and Swami Shivananda, he wanted them to take the person to the prison so people don't hurt him like this, right? Now what happened is, the next day Swami Shivananda went to the prison, did puja to that person, and gave him money and sent him back home, wherever else he was in India by train, gave him money, sent food to go, like this. And Swami Shivananda said, you know, it's a test to see, am I going to see the person who comes with a garland and the person who comes to assassinate me, am I going to see them the same? So the life like this throws so many things at us, And then how am I going to, in order to teach me to look at it evenly like this, like that? Just like if you see when they train the tennis players, right? They train, they have that machine that's throwing the tennis balls. So if you're a beginner, probably once in 10 seconds a ball will fly. You get more advanced once in 5, and then like every other second a ball is flying all over. They have to run and hit. You'll say, oh, you're torturing the person. Why do they have to run all over like this? So training. So this way we can say, we can see it as a training. So in this way, and then we can assess and see how much I can imbibe this. So this is a nice thing how I can see it in this way. And what happens is, let's say in the forest fires we were just having, right? Hopefully they're, you know, calmed down now. But when they're happening, let's say the fire department says this one was 90% controlled, how they're saying how much it's controlled. They'll say it's 95% controlled. There's a little bit left there. Are we going to, somebody lives in that area not too far away, are they going to say, tell the fire department, thank you very much, we're very happy, you can go home. It's only 3% left. Yeah, you go, we're happy. They're going to say, no, you can't go till it's completely out. Don't leave a little bit left, because that little bit, what can it do? Like this. There's a Sanskrit saying, as you know, as I learned Sanskrit a little late in life, than all the subhashitas I learned, most of them, the words don't stay in the mind, but some of the ideas. So there's a very nice one that says that if you have a little bit of fire left, little bit of fire, or a little bit of a debt, or a little bit of enemy, probably enmity it means, you know, these ones you want to stamp out. You don't want to keep a little bit of any of these things, because that little bit later will become. So that little bit of fire you don't want, because, okay, it's little now, but what'll happen? So in this way, from this highest vision, it says you hold on to a little bit of differentiation. Just differentiate a little bit. That's going to cause the, that's going to have the whole samsara come back up, right? In Gita, dhyayate vishayan pumsa sangasteshu kajayate, says you start thinking of the objects of the senses, meaning, you know, the things I experience of the world. So if I start dwelling on, then if I start thinking about much, then now I'm going to like, I'm going to think more of this one, and this one I'm not going to like as much, because slowly, just because of thinking about it slowly, some attachment is going to come up. Some attachment, like or dislike, will naturally slowly come up if I stick with it. That's why actually for the sannyasis, parivrajak sannyasis in India, they have very strict rules. One thing, they don't stay in one place for 3 days. They can't beg from the same house more than once. Like a village, they can certain amount of houses. Things like this, so they can't get attached just to a certain place. Because otherwise, these people are treating them nicely, let me stay here. That village, they didn't give me much money, or they cursed me this, so I don't like them. So then the raga dvesha comes up, stays there. But in any case, so that little bit, when I hold on to, then it's going to slowly grow. Then likes and dislikes, you know, I'm going to have a set idea of something. This product is good, the other one product isn't as good, so I want this one. And then I'm going to, you know, put more effort to get this one. And that my likes are going to, then I can't get it. Now I'm going to feel so bad. Oh no, why can't I get it? It was so good. Now things aren't as good as they used to be. And on. The whole thing starts growing and growing from that. So really from this perspective. And as we said, this perspective, this verse is saying this is the bar. You know, later it'll say, okay, if you can't, you're not ready for that high bar, okay, here's what you can do as a lower bar for now, until, to, you know, for you to progress towards the higher bar. But to see what the higher bar is, what it is that we want to reach, like this. This is so important, not to compromise on that one. Because, okay, I'm not there, I do my preparation. But I want to know what it is, not just, you know, some assumption like this. So in this way, any differentiation, then it's going to bring that about. So of course, from Vyavahara perspective, my interaction with things, yes, you know, things have to be dealt with as needed, but that's different from understanding the interaction. Of course, my interaction will be different, but still interaction has to be done, even with that, has to be done, but this understanding has to be behind it. One time in the ashram in Uttarkashi, there was an interesting incident showing this. There's one fellow used to stay there who every day does big puja to Hanuman, every day so much. He gave me one small Panchamukh Hanuman statue I have here, very small one. So like this, because he every day is doing like this. So he was staying there at that time. So in the morning, Swami Premananji every morning has Vishnu Sahasranama chanting at 4:30 or so, or 5. And then afterwards the Saraswati Upanishad. So both of those. So in the morning when going down one day, he came to Swami Premananji and he said, you know, there are monkeys, because monkeys sometimes come to the ashram and they can cause, you know, a lot of problems. Now a lot of places in India, I know from our family there, I guess because the COVID, they've gone around more, so they cause a lot more problem going to people's houses and breaking, eating things and everything. So in any case, so they were there, and so he came to Swami Premananji and said, oh, you know, the monkeys are out there, I saw. So Swami Premananji said to him, did you just go do pranam Hanumanji and this and come like this? He said, this Hanuman, you have to give him pranam by taking his stick and yelling and running after him. What kind of a thing is this? If you just come tell me the monkey's there, you didn't chase him away. What kind of problem is he doing? What is, you know, maybe they put rice and stuff out to dry. Who knows what they did? The monkey will cause problems, right? In the guard, maybe the monkey will come and cause. So, yes. So he scolded him real well, saying, you know, you have to be practical like this. Don't just... So, yes, the god is in that monkey, but you have to chase the monkey away if he's there causing trouble, no? Like this. So the vision has to be clear like this, but then the action. And actually, those who have the clear vision don't have a problem with the action at all. That's because the vision, there's no question about the vision, so what needs to be done, there's no problem doing, because there's no... The ego isn't something more liquid, more not solid thing. It's just a tool. So I'll give you another example with this, with Swami Premananji, with this thing of the, you know, using the ego, but knowing it's not. It's just using it. It's not the absolute thing. He told a story about how he played drama. He says he's playing drama. So that's what Mahatma do. They play drama because they know it's just a drama, right? So in the ashram there, they were building the this big building they have there, which hopefully you come see one day. So because he had a little courtier, two rooms and a kitchen, that was everything. And then he made this big one that's now there, so many, many people can come and stay. So what happened was they were making the roof. Actually, the roof was one level. It's already two levels higher than it used to be some years ago. It grew more. So the builders were supposed to tar the roof. And the rainy season starting any day, it's going to start raining hard. And it's going to be a lot of problems in the building if the roof isn't, you know, isn't done. It isn't tarred or whatever the material they put there. And you know how things go there. They weren't getting anything done. It was dragging out. Nothing was happening. So Swami Premananji, then one day, it was dragging out. And he's there. And the thing is, he's in a very rural area there. And knowing how he is to deal with the village mindset, with the village contractor. So he got up. And he took a stick and he yelled at his staff. He said, where's the contractor? Bring him. Where is he? So he came, all scared, hearing Swamiji's very angry. And Swami Premananji yelled at him and said, why isn't the work getting done? Right? Just because I'm a monk in this, I can't take the stick and beat you and break your bones in this. Why is it not getting done? This day itself, you have to finish tarring the roof like this. Yelled and yelled, and the guy was so scared. And so they worked all day, all night, this to finish and everything and all. And then there was a tiny bit left to do. So then later Swami Premananji told, you know, calmed him down and said, don't worry, I'm not doing anything this, but we have to get the work done and you guys are just lazy, you know, and everything. And there was a tiny bit left in the roof. And that took, you know, days and days on end after that, of course, to do, because he's done. But the thing is, again, so something was practical, had to be done. So he did it, but still, his vision didn't change. So it's somebody who is an expert at using the explosive, you know, they're mining, knows exactly how to do in this, they'll use good, let them do it. But if you're not expert at that, you don't want to play with it. Somebody's an expert at taking care of the lion in the zoo, let them do it. But, you know, I won't get close to that. You know, lion is a manifestation of God, but let him stay there, I'll stay here, that's fine. So same way, Mahatma can use the anger like that, but as long as I don't know how to do it, that I identify as an individual, I have to be very careful. We shouldn't use it like this, because then it slowly will control me like this. So the way we know is when an emotion like this comes up, if I use it and then afterwards I'm clean, it doesn't bother me, the wave doesn't come back, it's not that it'll come again and control me, then okay, I'm using it. But usually these things, they use me because I do it out of this, you know, even as righteousness, some ego can be involved in this. Again, it doesn't mean that in our positions you don't have to, you know. You're all moms, so you have to use, I'm sure, some of the time. Pull it out. So it's a good test to see that it's used as needed and not as... But actually, probably as a mom, probably you know how to use this better than anybody, and so this is how it can be used in life instead of having it use you like this. But in any case, so the vision is one thing, but the vyavahara will always be, you know, go hand in hand with the vision. But the vision is the most important, the base like this. So in any case, so what happens is the moment that I, what am I protecting? I protect the vision of myself, where instead of that the vision is I'm purna, I'm complete. Like deep sleep. Deep sleep we love because we're whole, we're complete. No problem. As awaker, then I feel incomplete. So the symptoms of this come, number one, I want to, you know, protect myself. So bunjitaha, protect. I want to protect, I want to get the alarm system, right? The insurance, all this. So I want to protect. And secondly, I want to also, I'm not full, so something will fulfill me. So I want to enjoy. So I want artha and kama, I feel are needed to protect and to fulfill myself. So protection from the idea of apurnatvam. The only protection from that, the security we give is a, you know, not a very strong security. Like I'll give you an example. Now we feel more secure that we have a Rakshas president that won't be there too much longer. Very good. So we feel good and secure. Give it a few weeks. Something else. Right? Something else. Nothing is going to totally do it. Now, okay, Senate will be this. Okay, Senate will go the way, fine. Something else will come. It's inevitable, right? So it's inevitable that because you can't totally protect that, the only way to protect a Purnatvam is Purnatvam. There's no other way to do it. Because look, the only way, when we get totally fulfilled, deep sleep, how wonderful, total fulfilled in the daily life, is a short time where I drop the idea of being just the limited individual. Okay, then I forget it, or to some extent I drop it so I feel more fulfilled, more content. So this is pretend, this vision, I have to hold on to that vision to protect this one, to protect from this one. This is the, you know, the best protection, like this. The other ones are, you know, they're temporary, they're not, they have a limited warranty, right? Warranty runs out pretty soon, like this. So this is how we say how this works, like this. And then what happens is, the According to Vishnu-Vedanta, really all that I want, what I want is to be free. What I want is moksha, really. The other aims I have are just taking this in a skewed way, skewed or limited way. So the kama purushartha that I want to fulfill myself by something else is a skewed vision of it. Okay, I feel a little down in this. I'm going to have, you know, something. I feel unfull without it. I need something to fulfill that, to fill that gap. But then that's temporary, and then it goes away, and I need to do it again, like this. So this tena tatena bhunjitaha, this is saying, well, and bhunjitaha, you protect, you should protect, right? Those in Sanskrit, because second person, right, singular, you protect by this renunciation, Upanishad is telling you. And what happens then is this this thing then is protecting from the kama purusharta is taken care of this way, because everything, there's just one with everything. What is there for me to desire now? If do I desire what I already am, what I already have? No, I desire something else. Deep sleep, I'm one with everything, I don't need to desire anything. Mind is quiet, I don't desire anything. So this protects from this. This is saying by the renunciation, protects from that, like this. Tena tektena. Magridaha kasya swidhanam, and don't covet wealth, anybody's wealth, any material objects, don't covet that. This then is artha purushartham, because another thing is, I want to the desire for liberation, for freedom, also comes by I need to be protected in order to have that, like this. This is what happens. So what happens is this child was walking in the street with the father, young child, and then he hasn't seen police or anything before, so he sees one person with handcuffs. The policeman's taking. What happened? That person's a criminal, so police caught him and is taking him. Okay, very good. So then he sees one other bigger guy with that and with two policemen taking him. Why? So what's with this one? They must have been near the police station or something. Oh, he was a bigger criminal. So that's why he needs more protection, more policemen to get, because he's more dangerous. Then the minister's walking by, and the minister has, you know, a dozen guards. So the kid says, oh, he must be the biggest criminal. So the protection, and, you know, again, we need some protect. It's not that, again, from worldly perspective, okay, some needed there in this. But from understanding perspective, I can't rely on that. And so I want things. Why? I want things for artha. I want for my protection. Right? We were talking before the social media. I want friends on Facebook. I have more of a circle. I have people to fall back on, to lean on in this. It's also a type of protection like this. So this is I want something to hold on to. And we see again, the deep sleep again shows when I let go of everything, how wonderful. But then there's an insecurity that I want to. So this one, and again, it's apuranatvam. I want to hold on to things. And even more, first of all, other people's. Oh, that person has a bigger house or bigger car, or has this I don't have. That we always look at, where does it end? It doesn't help. That's, you know, never-ending story if you have that. My Vedanta teacher, Vijay Kapoorji, somehow he's circles of a lot of very wealthy Indian people in the Bay Area. Somehow he doesn't know how they've invited him to things. So he said he was in somebody's house, and what happened there, these are like the most rich people in the area, something going on there. And he said that there, all of them were talking about how they all have like private jets. One person was there, very wealthy, but not quite as much as the others. So he doesn't have a big private jet, he has a small private jet. So he was feeling bad about that. He was feeling inferior because of this. You know? Where does it end? There's another very nice Sanskrit Subhashita saying that says about the one who has 100 wants to have 1,000. One who has 1,000 wants 10,000, right? Then that one wants to be, the one that has 10,000 wants to be the, you know, the mayor. There are just the elections here, mayor. You know, our mayor stayed in place, no, stay mayor in Fremont. Okay, that mayor wants to become the governor. The governor wants to be the president, like our previous governor, Schwarzenegger, how he was saying when he was towards the end of his term that he didn't think that if you weren't born here, if you were here long enough, you should be able to be president. You know, the one who's governor wants to be president. President wants to be head of the whole world. This one wants to be the Indra. The Indra wants to be the Brahmaji creator. Said, who's gone beyond the border of desire? Where does it end? Where does it end for desire or for secure, you know, secure? Where does it end? So being, being just content, what I have, if I'm not content with that, I'll never be content. Not possible. Because I'll get the next mean and next. I get one more means more. Endless. So this is endless trap like this. So that's why I'm not coveting others and also my things, whatever is there, great, share what I can and then be happy with because endless. And really, you've probably all seen this too. But I see our family in India, they're poor. Some of the time, some of them, they don't even know, you know, they don't have enough for the food. They don't know where it's going to come from. We have helped and stuff for things, but some there can be cases like that. You know, my older sister-in-law, really very poor like this, that they don't always, you know where it's going to be. And they're very simply content, this, because not so much desire and all. When we have too much, then actually get more spoiled because everything at our fingertips, next thing I want very much. So this is very interesting how more poor can make it a little easier with that. But in any case, the endless, and this is an endless thing and it's a trap. So it's saying that's a trap, that be content with that. And of course, this first verse, a lot of times they say, a lot of the commentators will say this part of the first verse, ma gridakasya svidhanam, for sannyasa, for people that are renounced, for them there's nothing to hold on to, not you know, they don't have their own possessions, don't hold on to other people's possessions, done. And then they say, if you're not like this, then go to the next verse there, how you can live with if you're not sannyasi. This is what some of the commentators will say. But then the other hand, the internal sannyasa is also pointed out. So this is important point on this. And then also this magridha kasya svidhanam can be seen in two ways. One is, as we said, magridha kasya svidhanam, don't covet, you know, don't covet anybody's possessions like this. This is one thing. Interesting word, possessions. Because possession, I possess it. But by my possessing it, very soon, I'm possessed by that. I become possessed. Because now, if it's not there, what will I do? Imagine there's a what do they call callback where the companies take back something that they give because of the problem. All the Alexas and similar devices are called back because of something. How are people without their Alexa? Let's say studies are finding that the way, after a little while they'll find the way we use our cell phones and all of this causing radiation, causing a lot of cancer, so they make it illegal. They close down all the cell towers, all this, no more using cell phones. How? There would be a revolution. Look, just in France, just to have a tax on gasoline in order to help with global warming, there have been such demonstrations, violent demonstrations. What'll happen if somebody does this? So how much we're possessed? I have something, now I'm possessed by it. I possess, but it possesses me. So one, don't covet the possessions. The other, which is an even deeper vision of this, breaks it into magridaha, don't covet. Kasya swidhanam, the question, whose is this? Don't covet wealth. Whose is this wealth? Whose are these possessions? Right? I have the house. Whose is this? Well, it's 50% mine or 40% mine, 60% the bank and this. But even my house, I paid my mortgage, my house, sure. Tomorrow the earthquake's going to say it's, Mother Earth will say it's mine, look. You know, tomorrow the country is going to say, okay, this is a fire zone. We'll give you $10,000, $100,000, land desires, you have to go, fire zone, you can't be here. Or we have to make the freeway wider. Whatever, they can take the land, right? All these things can happen. Any day I die, can I take it with me? Tomorrow somebody makes a court case. This happens in India a lot. You own the land, somebody court case, it's stuck forever, you can't stay there, you don't have the land. So what do you mean it's mine? Whose is it? Right? Is it mine? What the Native Americans, when the Westerners first came here and wanted to buy the land, they bought Manhattan. And they laughed at them, like, what is it, owning land? What does that mean? They didn't understand the concept. So we try to own things, but whose is it really? Is it mine? You know, everything belongs to thee. Isha, Lord Shiva tomorrow comes and says, okay, I'm taking everything back, swallowing it all. No, 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 it's mine. What do you mean it's mine? What do you mean it's mine? So whose is all of this? What is really mine? You know, the body is mine. It belongs to me. You have it. Say on it, but your kids, husbands, this, they also say, your boss, say it belongs to them, right? The bacteria and things say it belongs to them, right? Later on, my body is put in the ground after I die. The worms say it's theirs. So many others have claimed. Lord Yama says it's mine, you know, when it's my turn, I'm taking. Everybody says, what do you mean mine? Right. So, temporarily, Ishvara lent some things to me, temporarily, and then he'll say, I want it back, and you have to give back, you have no choice. So what is mine really? So really, it's a rhetorical question, not a question that answer, really. Nothing really belongs to me. So the one who is external renunciation, it's just a direct acceptance, yes, nothing really belongs to me, and living according to that. But in us living in houses and family and this, also what belongs to you there, nothing really belongs to you, you know, because what is yours? You know, it's just a convention we have, an idea we have, but anything's there now, tomorrow can be gone. Just a convention that I say it's mine, but mine is just an idea. Also, can you really, you know, how can you say like this? So this is the deeper vision, magrida kasisvidhanam. What is it? Right? So this is what happens. So this is about the second part, how this is done, looking into this. And this sadhana, actually very interesting. This sadhana is sadhana of understanding and then trying to live from that understanding, not of doing something. It's the jnana yoga, understanding that. This way of thinking will protect, will save me from trouble and eventually take me beyond the troubles. And this is how, and really, you know, looking into these things, because first, as Upanishad, as we said, the meaning, shaking first my limited ideas, and then, you know, making it totally, and giving a strong foundation in something deeper, not just this limited idea, like this. Then afterwards, the Upanishad will say, okay, and then if you're not doing this yet, what can you do? And that's what the second verse is going to be, he'll be discussing. So the Upanishad will bring. So next week, we'll get into that, the second verse, Kurvaneveha Karmani, the more preparatory thing, or practical way, what we can do in the meantime as we strive for this vision, like this. So, and this will conclude today's class and the first verse, which is the first chapter, actually. One verse chapter. Second chapter will be one verse chapter. like this. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.